Hello and welcome to our micronutrients module on vitamin D. Vitamin D is also called the sunshine vitamin. And believe it or not, vitamin D is actually not really a vitamin. It's really a pro-hormone. So we'll talk more about that as we share a little bit about it structurally. I think you all know that already. But we call it a vitamin because it's something we have to get every day. And we're supposed to get it from sunshine, but that doesn't always work out for a number of reasons that we'll discuss. And then we have to end up resorting to food sources. So we're here today to discuss all of that wonderful stuff. And again, this information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. It's not medical advice. It's intended to be educational so that you can share with your clients ways that they can create balance, restore balance, and get their health back in order. But it's certainly not diagnosis or treatment. And if they're under the care of any medical practitioner or on any medication, it's really important that they make sure that they check in with their medical practitioners. So let's go ahead and get started. And we'll start right off with a really cool diagram, which shows us the biochemistry to an extent of vitamin D. So let's review this. You may already know this, but I'd like to review it just so that we're on equal footing from the start. Good old sunshine. Good old badly treated sunshine, I believe, because we've gotten into a situation in our society where the sun is deemed as evil, bad, etc. And people are blocking the sun. They're putting on these toxic chemicals on their screens to keep them from getting sunburned. When in reality, the truth is that the dangers of deficient sun exposure are actually much greater than the dangers of excess sun exposure. And really what we want is the ideal amount of sun exposure, just like we want the ideal amount of all the nutrients that we're dealing with. So we have the UVB rays that hit our skin. And in the skin, we have a precursor to vitamin D, which is called dehydrocholesterol. There goes cholesterol, right? Another thing that's been, you know, has a bad reputation when really it's a very essential chemical in our body. And the dehydrocholesterol gets converted into pre-vitamin D and then into vitamin D, which goes into circulation. And it goes into, the first step is the liver, where the D3 gets converted to 25-hydroxy-D3. And that, by the way, is the form that we measure when we do vitamin D blood tests. It then goes from the liver into the kidney, where the 25-hydroxy is converted to 1,25-dihydroxy vitamin D. And then that goes to the intestine, the bones, the immune cells, and wherever else we need to use the vitamin D. And it's a lot of places in the body, as you'll soon see. If you have vitamin D coming in from your diet, then it's similar. It gets absorbed through the intestines into the circulation and then goes to the liver and then the kidneys. So it's the same source. It's just you're either taking it, the D preformed in your diet, or you're being exposed to the sun and having the dehydrocholesterol converted to pre-D3 to D3. Then that goes in circulation. So that's an overview. Let's take a look at what all this means. This is a quote from Zoltan Rona in the book that we'll show you later about the sunshine vitamin. It's called, so she says, sun phobia, sunscreens, and spending too much time indoors have contributed to the problem of vitamin D insufficiency. And so many people have been told to stay away from the sun and put on the sunscreens and block the sun in every way that we end up with a lot of pale people who are vitamin D deficient. And vitamin D deficiency can be a precursor to cancer. And the cancers that vitamin D deficiency can lead to are mostly more dangerous than the kind of cancers that excess sun exposure on the skin can lead to. And I'll show you that in a bit. So what are some of the functions of vitamin D? Vitamin D has functions all throughout. You can see the structure of vitamin D here. It's a sterol. It's a steroid molecule. And it's similar to some of our other steroid hormones, you know, estrogen, progesterone, cholesterol, which is not a hormone, but it's a sterol. Vitamin D is a sterol. It helps the gut absorb calcium and phosphorus, which is why it's so important for what? Bone health. It's not that the vitamin D is actually building the bone. It's helping the gut absorb more calcium and phosphorus so that the bone can be built. It also helps regulate the calcium and phosphorus metabolism in the blood. It's important for adrenal gland health. It's important in blood sugar control. Of course, the absorption and the bone metabolism is very important. It's important for the brain and the nervous system development and function, which is why sometimes we see people getting problems with their depression when they don't have enough D. It's amazing how sometimes people can just, they're depressed, send them out in the sun or give them some vitamin D and the depression goes away. And again, nothing is usually that simple. It's usually a multifactorial approach when you're working with people, but you can't overlook the simple stuff like vitamin D deficiency. Very important for digestion and nutrient absorption, as well as the blood-brain permeability and the gut membrane permeability. So if you've got low vitamin D status in a leaky gut and you're having some brain fog and other things that might suggest blood-brain barrier permeability, bad shape, right? So D status needs to be addressed. Doesn't mean that it's the be-all and the end-all and that all of these problems go away just by balancing D. But so many people overlook it and they get on calls with me and they start asking me about all these fancy things that they should be doing. Well, what about this and what about that and why do I have this? And I'll say, have you had your D checked? Yeah, I did. How long ago? 3 years ago. What was it? It was low. What did you do? Oh, the doctor told me to take whatever, 2,000 IUs of vitamin D every day. How long did you take it for? Just a few months. Are you still taking it? No. Did you get it tested again? No. Then let's do something much more proactive here, much more foundational than trying to find the perfect herb or the perfect supplement to fix the problem, right? We need to do the basics, and vitamin D is really important. And I know it's hard to just like, yeah, you got to go back, and you got to go back every 3 months initially, and then maybe every 6 months, but it's really important to fine tune it. And a lot of factors play into vitamin D absorption, which we'll look at in a bit. One of them is genetics. You may have the genetic markers that affect the vitamin D receptors, and your body's just going to need more of the vitamin D in order for it to be effective. So let's look at some other functions of vitamin D. Immune system health, moon mind, memory behavior, muscle, nerve, and athletic performance, normal blood pressure, pancreatic health, which means blood sugar and digestive enzymes, right? Skin health, sleep. And what does sleep tie into besides everything? Everything, right? Blood sugar balance and hormone balance and digestion and thyroid. Sleep is critical. Vision, you know, it partners with vitamin A to help with vision, weight control. It helps with carbohydrate and fat metabolism. So D is like almost like a great mimicker. You can get symptoms in just about any part of your body when you're D deficient. So it's an important thing to just jump in right from the beginning and make sure people have good vitamin D status. I can't stress that enough. You want to maintain homeostasis of vitamin D. So, and the body's always looking to do that. So if you detect that you're low in vitamin D, low vitamin D is going to cause you to be low in calcium and phosphorus, because remember, vitamin Z affects the uptake in the digestive tract. That's going to cause the low calcium and phosphorus, especially calcium, is going to cause the parathyroids to release parathyroid hormone. And that's going to go to the bones and release some calcium and phosphorus to bring the levels back up. And if the vitamin D goes back to a sufficient level, it releases calcitonin, and then the calcium and phosphorus are returned back to the bone. So if you don't get the vitamin D levels back up, that calcium and phosphorus are just going to sit in your bones, in your blood, and not go back to the bones, and that leads to osteoporosis. So it's really, really important. So there's several different forms of vitamin D. There's D3, which is exclusively in animal sources. Usually you find it in the under the skin or under the the hair. So lanolin is a good source of vitamin D in animals. It's not actually in the flesh of the animal, but it's under the skin. So if you hide an animal or you shave an animal, like a sheep, you know, you shave the sheep, you're going to get the lanolin underneath. Vitamin D2 is found in plant sources in small amounts. We also call that ergocalciferol. There's found in mushrooms, and that's why some of the newer vegan sources of vitamin D on the market are, vitamin D3 is what's found in the mushrooms. So the D2 is found in a lot of others, but D3, the only really place you're going to find D3 in the plant kingdom is in mushrooms. And there's, you can argue whether mushrooms are actually a plant kingdom or not, because they're funguses and they grow on other things. D2 is found in plant sources. So synthetic D2, and that's fortified products. Like if you buy, you know, vitamin D milk or A&D homogenized fortified milk, that's going to be a synthetic form of D. And there have been mixed studies. The studies show that vitamin D is clearly more easily absorbed and readily absorbed, but D2 can actually be absorbed fairly well, and you can get larger doses. So people who want to maintain a vegan diet and not take supplements that are not vegan, that the vitamin D2 sources, you might have to have a little bit higher dose than you would for D3. Some of the studies don't show that it's not that considerable a difference. So why do we become vitamin D deficient? Well, some of it's really obvious, right? We have sun phobia. We wear too much sunscreen. We sit indoors all day at our computers and doing our work and don't get much time outdoors. Poor liver function, because remember, we have the kidney and the liver have to convert the forms of D that come in to the forms that the body can use. Poor bile production, which means that you're not going to be absorbing the vitamin D as well. Because remember, it's a fat-soluble vitamin. I think I failed to say that at the beginning. But D is a fat-soluble vitamin. Food allergies can prevent the absorption. A leaky gut, irritation in the gut, any kind of impairment. Northern climates and cold climates. It's said that above, like, Atlanta, Georgia, in the U.S., above Atlanta, Georgia, in the winter, you won't get anywhere near enough vitamin D. You won't get any vitamin D. In fact, it's said that you can lay naked on your roof the entire summer long if you live above that Atlanta, Georgia area, and you won't get any vitamin D. So you either have to be getting enough in the summer to be able to store it, which we can because it is a fat-soluble and it can get stored, or you need to be supplementing through the winter. Genetics play a huge role. There's a particular SNP, single nucleotide polymorphism, which is basically a variation in the genetics where yours is different from what it quote unquote should be, and it affects the vitamin D receptors and the uptake of the vitamin D. Showering and scrubbing with soap, believe it or not, if you're out in the sun and you get sun exposure, if you come in and just shower and scrub with soap right away, you're going to scrub off that vitamin D precursor while it's being converted to vitamin D and before it's fully absorbed into your skin. So it's recommended that you wait actually 48 hours before you scrub with soap any of the areas that have been exposed in order to get the best vitamin D. Obviously, if you've got parts of you that you've been, you know, out under the car and getting grease on you or whatever, you need to use the soap. But I stick to using soap in the pits and in the privates. That's it. Pits and privates. Everything else, we just don't use soap unless, of course, there's some grease or something else that's gotten on or some other kinds of dirt that won't come off. And then statin drugs actually can create a deficiency in vitamin D. We know that statin drugs interfere with CoQ10, but it also interferes with vitamin D. So here's just a picture I got from the Mayo Clinic, but this is what they're showing, and all the different things that can result from vitamin D deficiency. It's just rampant, right? Psychiatric disorders, schizophrenia, and depression. This is the Mayo Clinic saying this. This is not Alternative Medicine Journal. Urinary tract and tuberculosis and infections, they even list. High blood pressure and coronary heart disease. Breast, colon, prostate, and other kinds of cancer. And we spend a lot of time covering up from the sun to prevent the types of cancers like a basal cell, which are most likely to develop from sun exposure, which are benign. And we risk vitamin D deficiency and breast, colon, and prostate cancer, among other things. Diabetes and syndrome X are like syndrome X is precursor to diabetes, as you know. Obesity, these are other things that can be caused by vitamin D deficiency. Wheezing, and that's the uptake of air, the low volume. And then in terms of bone and muscles, osteoporosis. Osteomalacia is a softening of the bones. And in our vitamin A talk, we talked about the malacia of the keratomalacia of the cornea, right? Keratomalacia, I think it is, keratomalacia. But osteomalacia is actually softening of the bones. It's a little bit different than porous bones. It's actually soft bones. Osteoarthritis, rickets, which is, a severe form of vitamin D deficiency. We don't generally see that severe a form of vitamin D deficiency, but you look up rickets, you look up all the signs of rickets, and then you look for subtle signs of those symptoms in your patients to confirm vitamin D deficiency, muscle aches and weakness. But on the other side, they've listed a whole bunch of things that are contributing in terms of medications and supplements that can affect the absorption and the utilization of vitamin D. So anti-seizure medications, glucocorticoids, how do you say that? Rifampin, HAART, I'm not sure what that one is, St. John's wort. So too much St. John's wort can affect it. So too much St. John's wort can affect the skin. You get a photophobic kind of reaction. So I think that's the mechanism. And then when there's poor absorption in the case of like Crohn's and Ripple's, cystic fibrosis and celiac, and then in the case, of course, of organ failure like liver and renal, because those are going to be problems. And then nephrotic syndrome, which is a condition, a chronic condition of the kidneys. So all of these things, in addition to the sunscreen, how dark your skin is, the latitude and the season is going to affect this. And all of these things on the right-hand side are going to contribute to us vitamin D deficiency, and the things on the left are what vitamin D deficiency might look like. So we'll just go through some of these, but this is so many things that vitamin D deficiency can result in. You might say, well, how would I know if somebody has vitamin D deficiency? How would I know at all? Because these are like widespread all over the place. If somebody has depression, does that mean they're vitamin D deficient? But like anything else, it's like a scorecard. We talk about that in our history taking, right? So you have your list, and it goes through all the different vitamins and minerals as well, but we're working on vitamins now. You look at vitamins, you look at vitamin D deficiency, and then you look at the symptoms of other things, and you see where do they have the most things lining up, and you try to make a decision based on that. Now, vitamin D, of course, you can tell because you blood test them, but a lot of people, they just don't have access to easy testing. Here in the US, we can use directlabs.com, and anybody can go get a vitamin D deficiency. A test, they just have to cough up $50. There's also online places where you can go and you can send away for a kit. You prick your finger, you send them your blood, and they test it. So it's easy to test vitamin D, but not necessarily all over. So you might want to be relying on the person's history. If they're overweight, it affects the metabolic rate. It affects the thyroid. It can lead to person being overweight, having high blood pressure. We already talked about the bones. Autism can be related to a lot of kids with autism have vitamin D deficiency, autoimmune conditions, cancer, depression, asthma, migraines, even cystic fibrosis. That's oftentimes thought of a genetic thing, but it's a genetic predisposition, and vitamin D deficiency can exacerbate it. Both types of diabetes, all kinds of autoimmune diseases, including multiple sclerosis. I mean, schizophrenia, epilepsy, PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. Looks like they missed making a line. But polycystic ovarian syndrome is a condition caused by elevated blood sugar and insulin resistance, and it causes excesses of the androgens, the testosterone and DHEA, in females, which can lead to some issues with fertility, with acne, with weight gain, and a whole bunch of other things. It's not a pleasant situation. All kinds of musculoskeletal pain, muscle weakness, poor balance, systemic inflammation, and fibromyalgia. All of these can be possible manifestations of vitamin D deficiency. So let's look at if you're measuring this stuff, and this is, of course, U.S. measures, there are plenty of sites online that you can go to and get the conversion into standard international units. Oh, here it says right here to multiply by 2.496. So if you're in Canada or England or Europe or any place else in the world, actually, besides the U.S., you're going to be using the standard international units, so you can multiply these numbers by 2.46. Anything over 100 is considered excessive vitamin D. Anything under 10 is considered seriously deficient. Anything under 20 is considered an overt deficiency. Under 30 is deficient. And then according to, you know, our Western medicine, 30 to 50 is suboptimal. And 50 to 70 is the proposed optimal range. And some studies suggest that 70 to 100 is the real optimal range, because that's the rate at which cancer rates plummet. People with those levels don't actually have much in the way of cancer. So you get somebody tested, you look to see where they fall, and then I can share with you how to supplement. So what I'll typically do is, if someone is under 10, which is seriously deficient, I'm going to put them on 20,000 IUs a day for minimum 6 weeks, probably for 3 months. Okay? Here's the deal, though. I've had people go on the 20,000 for 6 weeks and go back and retest and have gone from 8 to 100. I've had other people stay on the 20,000 for up to a year and a half and only go up to 60. So it's going to vary widely. So that's why I usually like it to test again at 6 weeks. If they don't want to spend the money, it's not convenient, I'll generally say, well, do the 20,000 for 6 weeks and then switch to 10,000, because I don't think they're going to get to excess that way. If they're between 10 and 20, I'll probably do that same thing. All right. I will probably do the same thing. If they've had, if they're between 10 and 20 and they are, I would not have them go 3 months without, I would probably do the same thing. If they're between 20 and 30, usually I'll start with 10,000. And I'll start them with 10,000. I'll recheck them at 6 weeks, at most 3 months. And then if they're still low, then we bump it up. If they're going up, but they're going up very, very slowly, I may bump it up a little bit. So we want to get them up. With vitamin D, you can actually replenish and replete very quickly. The trick is maintaining it. So there have been studies where they've given people 100,000 IUs of vitamin D 3, 4, 5 times a week, and after 2 weeks had their numbers go up dramatically into the normal range from very low. However, those were studies, right? So they're able to test more frequently. I certainly would never put somebody on 100,000 IUs of vitamin D for more than 3 days. And the 3 days is because sometimes in acute viral infection, you can knock it out with a combination of D, A, and C at high levels, so around 100,000 IUs. But I would only do that for a few days and then bring it down. Now, if I was in a lab situation where I could test these people all the time, I'd probably be a lot more aggressive with the supplementation. But you don't want to get into the excess, because I'll show you what some of the symptoms are of excess. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but people freak out. And if it goes too long, it can be dangerous. If they're between 30 and 50, I probably would go 10,000 for 3 months and test after that. If they start out between 50 and 70, I'm probably going to put them on 5,000 and check them in 3 months and see where they're at. I'd really like them ideally to get to the 75 to 100. What you're going to find is that you'll start to get an intuitive sense of how much you should be giving them based on what they've got and based on where they came from. If you know their genetics, it helps even better, because if you know they have SNPs for the vitamin D receptors, you're going to be much more comfortable with higher doses. So let's look at some of the statistics, right? It's really, really rampant, vitamin D deficiency, way, way rampant. So of all the people in this particular study, I gave you the link there, they found that 41% of the people had vitamin D levels below 20. That's overt deficiency, right? 82.1% of African Americans had below 20. So it's clearly a higher problem. And part of that is that the darker the pigment, the less efficient we are at picking up the vitamin D. So you need to stay out longer. Same thing with Hispanics, 69.2% had vitamin D levels below 20. I see huge numbers. And this is a study from 1988 to 1994. 45% of people had vitamin D levels of greater than 30. Wow, that's hardly any. By 2001 to 2004, only 23% had levels greater than 30. And here we are saying that we want people to be in the range of 70 to 100 or even 50 to 70 if we want to be conservative. And here's people, only 23% of people even had greater than 30. So it's a serious problem. And it's probably causing a lot of the chronic health challenges that people have, and nobody's really showing them. Let's talk about skin cancer and sun exposure. Well, the most deadly, dangerous of this skin cancers is melanoma. And it's not related to skin exposure, sun exposure. It might mildly be, but recent studies suggest it can be caused by vitamin D and omega-3 deficiencies. The basal cell carcinoma, which is triggered by sun exposure, is actually benign and can be removed. Now, of course, we don't want to get excess sun exposure and get a basal cell carcinoma and have to get it removed. But the point is that they're benign, and we're putting on all these sunscreens that are carcinogenic and getting our vitamin D's deficient to prevent a kind of cancer that's benign, when the more serious cancers like prostate, breast, uterine, and melanoma are actually caused by vitamin D deficiency. So the trick is to tell people to get out of the sun when the skin starts to turn a little pink. Don't stay out there till you're brown. I mean, not brown, bright red. Brown isn't going to hurt. If you need sunblocks, don't use those carcinogenic over-the-counter stuff that you buy at the grocery store. Instead, you can use zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. So who's at highest risk of vitamin D deficiency? Well, overweight. They have a greater need because it gets stored in the fat and it doesn't get released into circulation to do its thing. Pregnant women need more. They're feeding their babies. The elderly, because the skin loses the ability to produce as it gets older and more damaged, and they get more deficient. And then dark-skinned people, because the melanin blocks the UVB rays. So let's talk about testing, okay? I highly recommend that everybody get a baseline test. So whenever you have somebody come in, if they don't bring you a vitamin D test that's recent, within 3 months, get them to get a baseline. You see what that where they're at. You talk to them about sun exposure, safe sun exposure, and then you give them a recommendation for supplementation. And until it's stable, I recommend testing every 3 months for at least a year, because otherwise you're not going to get it right. You're just not going to know. You got to test in both the winter and the summer, because it's going to make a difference unless you live in the tropics. So how much is safe to supplement? Well, there have been a lot of studies looking at this. A University of Toronto study said there's no measurable shifts in the vitamin D until it's greater than 4,000. That when you're out in the sun, you make 20,000 IUs every hour. So if you go on a tropical vacation, you're making a heck of a lot more than the 20,000 a day, which is the high end of the recommendation that I conservatively make. You've got skin reserves, and 10,000 IUs is considered an optimal dose by Dr. Zoltan Rona, author of the vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin. Now, he's kind of saying that for everyone. It may not be the ideal for everyone. Some people might go too high with 10,000, but it's definitely considered a safe dose. It's going to be hard to get you into unsafe doses on 10,000 a day, unsafe levels. Some more serious conditions that benefit from large doses of vitamin D, and this was a study by Dr. Joe Prendergast. He's an endocrinologist, and he actually studied this at 50,000 a day in these conditions. So again, when we ask super physiologic doses, normal doses, how do we know? We've got to look at the history. We've got to really understand where this person's at. Cancer, it's been studied in all sorts of cancers. ALS, that's Lou Gehrig's disease, right? Alateral myo, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, very serious neurologic condition. Depression, Hashimoto's, multiple sclerosis, allergies, flu, rheumatoid arthritis, heart disease, lung disease, and osteoporosis. Now, you're not going to continue $50,000 IUs indefinitely, and I certainly recommend being conservative in testing. If you're on 50,000, I'd want to test in, 2 to 4 weeks just to make sure you weren't going too high. Unless you started at 8, you're probably going to be fine going 4 weeks. Okay, I tend to be a little bit more conservative, but this is a study that this endocrinologist determined was a good dose. So here's a guy with psoriasis, a subset of conditions that respond to vitamin D supplementation. This is page one. I think we have three of these. The flu, according to Cambridge journals, vitamin D reduces the incidence of respiratory infections in kids. Muscle weakness. There's a study by Michael Hollick. Muscle weakness is usually caused by vitamin D deficiency because for skeletal muscles to function properly, their vitamin D receptors must be sustained by vitamin D. Interesting, huh? And then psoriasis, this study in the UK, discovered that synthetic D, wasn't even natural D, synthetic D analogs were found useful in the treatment of psoriasis. It didn't really say the doses or anything, but I'm sure that's something, if you're working with somebody with psoriasis, that you can look into. And certainly get them tested. If they've got fibromyalgia, if they've got psoriasis, really, really important. What else responds to vitamin D supplementation? These are conditions. Well, chronic kidney disease. Patients with advanced chronic kidney disease are unable to make the active form of vitamin D. So you need to be taking more in order to facilitate that conversion. Diabetes. This was a study with 10,000 kids given 2,000 IUs a day of D3 during their first day of life. And when monitored for 31 years, the risk of type 1 diabetes was reduced by 80%. And that's a study from The Lancet. Asthma in school children in Japan significantly lowered in those taking a daily dose of vitamin D. And that's only with 1,200 IUs a day. So it doesn't have to be the massive 50,000, 20,000 doses. You just have to see how things respond and supplement accordingly. Some more conditions, periodontal disease, okay? Raising vitamin D levels increases various chemicals in the mouth that reduce the number of bacteria. These are defensins and catalysin. Cardiovascular disease, a Harvard University study with nurses found that women with low D had a 60% increased risk of hypertension. Schizophrenia and depression. Vitamin D prenatal and during childhood. Vitamin D receptors in the brain are important. So when you do this during the prenatal period and during their childhood, it decreases the incidences of schizophrenia and depression in later years. And fourth one, last one, Georgetown University Medical Center. Increased doses of vitamin D were linked to a 75% reduction in overall cancer growth and 50% reduction in tumor size among those already having the disease, especially in the estrogen-sensitive breast cancers. So it's just knocking the cancer out the window. Way more safe than chemotherapy. So let's look at some studies that looked at very high dose vitamin C supplementation. And how that worked. So John Collini, head of the Vitamin D Council, recommends 50 to 100,000 IUs daily for cold or flu. Again, that's short term. I wouldn't do more than 3 to 5 days. And I've recommended it to people. I recommended it once to somebody who'd had this flu that was going on for 6 weeks. She wasn't, 10 days already. And it wasn't getting better. I had her do the 100,000 IUs of vitamin D and it was gone in 3 days. Mercola recommends 90% of your body weight during a swine flu attack. So that means if you weigh 100 pounds, that's 90 IUs. If you weigh 200 pounds, that's 180 IUs, 90%. Norm Shealy, an MD into alternative medicine and functional medicine, he has taken 50,000 IUs consistently for 18 months. Everybody's different. Other people would take 50,000 IUs for a month and get their numbers too high. But it just depends, and it's up to you to figure it out and help your patients to figure it out. Important warning, when you don't want to take high levels of calcium with such high doses of D, because it's going to cause all that to be absorbed and you may end up with calcification. So don't increase your calcium. Just stay away from the calcium when you're having those high doses. Now, calcium-rich foods, of course, but not calcium supplements, because you run the risk of overabsorbing. And small amounts might be fine. In the 30s and 40s, doctors at Johns Hopkins gave 600,000 IUs to treat arthritis, and only 10 patients developed symptoms of toxicity after 2 to 18 months. So that's saying that people needed it desperately. So how do you know if somebody's getting toxic from vitamin D? Well, you look at weight loss and fatigue. Those are the first signs. Well, that can happen with anything. But if you have somebody who's just suddenly dropping weight and getting exhausted, and that's not one, something that was a problem, then they may be toxic. Loss of appetite, that's another clue. And nausea or vomiting, that's another clue. If you do their blood and you test and you see high blood calcium, that's another clue that there might be in vitamin D toxicity. Kidney damage, right? So that the kidneys aren't filtering properly. The only deaths that were reported with high dose of vitamin D were when steroids were prescribed with the vitamin D. It's the only time, okay? So it doesn't mean it's safe to do high-dose vitamin D. You always have to be careful and err on the side of caution. You don't want to cause somebody to go into toxicity. But these are the ways that you look out for it. So if you ask somebody to do 20,000 IUs of vitamin D a day and you say retest in 6 weeks, and at 4 weeks they say, I don't know what's happening, but I lost my appetite. I feel exhausted all the time. I'm feeling nauseous. You stop them. You get them tested right away. Okay, that's the cool part about D, is it's so responsive to testing and so easy to test. So what do you do if somebody develops vitamin D toxicity? Well, you discontinue the supplements, obviously. You stay out of the sun so you don't build it up. Drinking at least 4 liters of water a day to help flush. And then the symptoms should resolve in a few weeks. If the calcium level has gone up, it might take a couple of months for that to normalize. So I said before, vitamin D is a sunshine vitamin, and that's where you're supposed to get it. But there are a few supplements that have it. Cod liver oil has a fair amount of vitamin D. 1 tablespoon is 1,360. Salmon, 4 ounces, 511, decent. Sardines, not as good, 175 per 3.2 ounces. Tuna, 93 per 4 ounces. It's not great. Egg. One egg has 43. IUs of vitamin D, not that great. Shiitake mushrooms, a half a cup, 20. So if you're doing the shiitake mushrooms, you want to be doing higher doses. And if it's fresh shiitake mushrooms, half a cup is quite small. You could do more than that. But it's a combination of things. And if you have somebody that's severely deficient, supplementation is the best way to go. So let's look at some supplementation guidelines. You should be taking or giving, prescribing, recommending vitamin K2 and vitamin A to go along with the vitamin D. Now, vitamin D, you might have to take very high doses. So I wouldn't recommend getting a combo formula of D and K and A together. I've seen D and K together, but I've seen more of D and K. I still wouldn't recommend it. If you want somebody to make it easier, they can take their D and K together. Then they'd have to take extra D if they need it, and they can always back it off because you don't need as much of the K as you do the D. And we'll talk K in a later presentation. Look at their drug interactions, right? You want to make sure that they're not doing drugs that are interacting. If they are, that they speak to their doctor. You want to look at, are there any drugs that would be hurt by vitamin D supplementation? And then, of course, like I said before, limit or avoid calcium supplements when you're doing high-dose vitamin D. And I've got resources for you. I've got lists of all the different books and some articles that I've got on my blog, some things by Mercola, and a couple of other things that are just, they're not links, but they're journals that you can go look in if you want to research this in more depth. So that's the end of our vitamin D presentation. I hope this was really helpful. I'll leave you with the nuggets of, it's really critical to get someone's vitamin D levels balanced no matter what the symptoms they're presenting with, because there's so many symptoms that could be related. Now it's oftentimes D plus something else, but we're digging for root causes always. So get the vitamin D tested, get the vitamin D supplemented, do the checking, make sure it's every 3 months or so over the course of a year, and make sure you can average out the sunny weather and the not sunny weather and see what they actually need to be supplementing. I like to supplement as little as possible, but as much as necessary. So thank you.